Hello, and welcome to the Society of Critical Care Medicine podcast. I'm your host, Diane McLaughlin. Today, I am joined by Benjamin Lasso and Dalton Gifford to discuss pearls and pitfalls of APP ICU fellowships from the learner perspective. As advanced practice provider postgraduate training programs expand, what can we learn from the graduates themselves? Benjamin Lasso is a physician assistant at St. Francis Hospital and Medical Center Cardiac Medicine Intensive Care Unit in Hartford, Connecticut. And Dalton Gifford is a physician assistant at the University of Kentucky Healthcare in the Medical ICU in Lexington, Kentucky. Welcome. Before we start, do either of you have any disclosures to report?
No disclosures from me.
No disclosures from me either.
All right. So jumping in, the first point of discussion is going to be, what made both of you decide to pursue postgraduate training programs? And we'll start with Dalton.
Coming out of PA school, obviously you're trained as a generalist, so you get a good broad experience in a lot of different fields, but critical care specifically is something we don't get a lot of training in. So just wanting to get a little more further education in the field and a higher level of education in terms of that. I knew I wanted to go into critical care out of school, but it's kind of a hard field to crack into as a new grad PA and has a very steep learning curve, which I think would be very difficult without some further education and training.
And then, Ben, what made you choose to go through a postgraduate training program?
Yeah, very well said, Dal. And that sort of echo what he said in that, you know, we're trained as generalists, typically outpatient providers right out of PA school. And just to give an example, the PA school will teach you how to interpret an ABG, but they may not teach you how to make a ventilator change. So that was kind of an example, and lots more examples that I can think about things that I learned in PA school that I wouldn't necessarily be able to apply and sort of excel in the ICU right away. So sort of formal postgraduate training was very interesting to me and something I wanted to pursue.
Now, was your program general critical care or was it a specialty unit? I see since you work in cardiac ICU.
Yeah, so mine was a general critical care fellowship. So we did MICU, SICU, trauma ICU, cardiac surgery ICU, a few different nuances to specific medical ICUs like oncology ICU and things of that nature. So I, you know, picked to generalize in cardiac critical care after, given the fact that I had a couple of rotations in cardiac medicine ICU in my fellowship that I really enjoyed.
And then Dalton, did you go through a general or specialty training program?
Yeah, so I did, similar to Ben, I did a general critical care residency program. We did 6 months of medicine ICU and then 6 months of surgical ICU with, again, various surgical rotations such as, you know, surgical ICU, neurology, neurosurgical ICU, cardiovascular ICU, and a few others as well.
What were some of the more challenging aspects of your postgraduate training?
Probably the most challenging sort of aspect for me was just jumping into critical care right away. And I think the fellowship aspect sort of buffered that in that, you know, my role was to be an autonomous provider, but also with the understanding that I'd have a lot of support and care, you know, from physicians and other APPs. And, you know, in a center like Emory, where there's a lot of teaching and whatnot, there was a lot of support from that perspective. And, you know, the schedule was difficult as well. We typically work the resident schedule on mostly 6 days a week, which was difficult, but definitely worth it in the long run.
I think that was very well said on Benjamin's part. I totally agree. I think all of his points are very well taken. Intensity for me was probably the big thing. Going from, you know, doing rotations in PA school where maybe a 4 to 6 week duration and you just kind of follow your preceptor schedule to going to a resident schedule where you're working, you know, 5, 6+ days a week. Sometimes, you know, you can have stretches even longer. Hours are long and just, you know, critical care is not an easy field by any stretch. So getting up to that learning curve and trying to focus on getting a better understanding of topics while trying to keep in mind your work-life balance and everything was pretty challenging.
What was your ICU exposure prior to undergoing your fellowship?
I was particularly lucky enough to score a couple of different ICU rotations as a PA student. I did a cardiac surgery rotation where I spent a couple weeks on a CV ICU, and then I did a MICU rotation and got to spend a lot of time there. But from what I know, I was pretty lucky in that I got to spend a lot of time. But, you know, I know some of my colleagues in PA weren't so lucky to spend as much time in their respective settings that they wanted to.
Yeah, I had a couple mentors that worked in critical care, so they were able to kind of let me shadow a little bit, and I was able to get a little bit of experience that way. But unfortunately, I finished PA school in the midst of COVID, so I saved all my electives for the end, but unfortunately I lost all of them due to COVID.
So for you, do you feel like going for the fellowship was particularly useful because you didn't have those experiences?
Absolutely. You know, it's hard enough to really get the exposure you need during the 4 to 6 week rotation, whatever the program gives you. But particularly in the case of having virtually zero experience, it was essential for me.
In what ways do you feel like you're more prepared for your role now after completing this additional training?
I certainly feel as though, you know, I don't really look at myself as an experienced tenure provider, but I definitely have the skills enough to sort of get through the day and take really good care of patients with the help of my attending. I think that's attributed to the variety of rotations that, you know, I was offered in fellowship, from MICU to neuro ICU to, you know, surgery in different cardiac settings. Definitely the variety is a big part, and also the procedures are a big part. We had sort of a certain number of procedures we'd have to do throughout the year, and going into my second year as a PA with the sort of comfortability of doing procedures sort of alone at that time was, I think, a really big bonus for me.
I agree with Ben. I think, you know, having the experience in a diverse set of ICUs, seeing how things are done differently in other places and being able to take bits and pieces of that to your own practice, as well as just having the procedural experience and, you know, the kind of vast knowledge. Again, I agree. It's not like you're a tenured provider that you've been doing this for many, many years, but I think it's certainly a jumpstart compared to new APPs in this kind of role.
So Dalton, so you work at University of Kentucky now. Did you do your fellowship training there as well?
I did the fellowship here. I was one of the first residents in our program.
And then, Ben, it sounds like you went through Emory's program, and now you've moved to another institution. Have you found a lot of similarities or more differences between how the two programs practice?
As far as the fellowship at Emory, definitely a much bigger teaching facility. The hospital I'm at now has a few residency programs that bring residents through, but my particular ICU doesn't have residents. So there's a lot less teaching that goes on in the unit that I'm in now. I certainly miss that about Emory, but you know, I'm really enjoying it.
So I know that you alluded earlier to work-life balance. How did you manage work-life balance, particularly with the added demands of postgraduate training?
I think for me, honestly, I think work-life balance is so difficult to achieve in that year just because it's so fast-paced. You know, with the ICU rotations in particular, you know, the medical residents sometimes will, you know, do medical ICU or, you know, surgical ICU, whatever their ICU rotation is for, you know, a month, and then they may switch to like an outpatient or something with a little more lenient schedule. But for us, it's just nonstop, you know, ICU rotation after ICU rotation. So the balance is pretty tough, but you just got to tell yourself, hey, it's 1 year, you know, I signed up for this. I'm going to be grateful for it at the end of that year. And, you know, in the beginning, particularly, it takes a lot of work up front to try to get yourself up to par, so to speak, trying to get where you can be a more functional, you know, provider. So as you get further along into that, you know, when you have your days off, you can spend more time with family, friends, and doing things that are meaningful to you.
Yeah, I think beautifully said there, Dalton. Like I said, you know, overall, it's a really difficult schedule. And I think, you know, the time that you do have off, you have to really learn how to disconnect in those, you know, day or so per week to try to get your mind off of it. But other than that, you kind of got to commit yourself to the year and kind of grind it out.
There's a stress level that comes with being a novice that people don't really talk about. And one of the stories that I have is actually not my own. It's coming into the unit as an experienced APP and getting sign up from a novice NP that tells a story about how she wanted to start IV fluids on a neuro patient and like wrestled with the decision for quite a long period of time about, oh, do I do LR or can I do saline? I know I don't want anything with dextrose, but is this isotonic or hypertonic? And then eventually she texts the attending and says, I want to start normal saline at 50. And she gets back the typical answer, okay. Mm-hmm. And when I think about that moment, it just tells me that that stress level that's existent. So what's some advice that you would give to new PAs or new NPs about balancing professional development and personal life? And how do you manage that stress level?
I mean, I think the first thing you have to do in the moment, as far as the stress level goes, is just involve the care of your patients with other experienced clinicians around you. I think working in an ICU is obviously a team sport. I think there are settings where you're sort of the loner, but I think most ICUs, you typically have a few different providers on. And I think generally there's an understanding amongst APPs that newer APPs particularly are going to need help and support. So I think the first thing you do is reach out to, you know, your colleagues and involve them in the care. And, you know, you're not asking them to do work for you. You're just asking for their opinion and sort of asking them to help you out with certain clinical decisions like that, that may be easier or may not be.
I think Ben perfectly crafted that response. I think, you know, and that's one of the benefits of residency initially too, is, you know, people understand and accept that you are a learner, you're in a learning role. So I think there's a component to the residency that's special about that. But that being said, I also think it kind of helps you develop, you know, a level of resilience and things as well, because as you go through those and have those situations, you become more resilient. And eventually you learn, you know, what is okay and what is not okay in terms of basic things like that. So I think as time progresses, you have less and less of those questions and things kind of improve for you, so to speak.
That's actually one of the things that I really like about these programs. And when I'm telling students about them, is that it is like a supervised immersion. So as opposed to general onboarding that they might say, okay, you get this many weeks or this, then it's as you go along in the program, you're getting more autonomy once you earn it. And it's not a set at the end of this, you have to do this. It's you're gradually joining practice until you get to that level of autonomy. And one of the things that I've heard from people that are not proponents of these programs is, why would you go through this year when you should be prepared to enter practice now? And what advice do you give to people that are kind of the naysayers of the programs as people that have gone through the program?
I would just say, you know, I'm certainly not in the business of talking anybody out of it, but I would say you have a unique opportunity to be sort of a paid learner in that you're going to be slowly immersed into a setting that's very difficult for new grad APPs. I think, you know, from my perspective, I don't particularly know how safe I would feel going into an ICU right away with the experience that I had prior to going to PA school and in the education that I got in PA school. And I think, you know, the residency or fellowship offers you that unique opportunity to develop those skills and still have sort of a learner and support system around you with the understanding that you still are a learner and you're sort of like, that's your role for the year.
Yeah, I agree with Ben. I think I wouldn't necessarily talk anyone out of it. I mean, it's not for everyone, but I do think there is a tremendous value to it, especially depending on what your experience in school was. My thing is, you know, you don't know what you don't know, especially coming out of school or out of, you know, your initial training. My opinion is it's very hard to learn the skills and knowledge you really need to have, you know, in a 4 to 6 week rotation, or even if you had, you know, a couple rotations, it's still very different. You're not the one that's signing into the patients and writing the notes and putting in the orders and doing things. So I think that certainly brings it to another level. So I find they have great value and I definitely do not regret my decision.
Ben, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think just the other aspect of it is, in my experience, most critical care fellowships have a variety of different rotations. And I would say that, you know, that unique opportunity provides you the chance to take care of all different types of patients, right? If you work in a cardiac medicine ICU like me, you're not going to necessarily admit stroke patients or trauma patients or general surgery patients that need ICU level of care. But there are always instances that the cardiac medicine patient that you're taking care of develops a need for a neurosurgeon or a general surgeon, or issues that, like, they develop cholecystitis or they develop a hemorrhagic stroke that you'd be familiar taking care of, given the fact that you did a fellowship and you had that unique opportunity to work in a unit where that was their sort of niche, like, if you know what I mean.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here a little bit, and I actually think that everybody would benefit from some type of postgraduate training. So what are some common misconceptions that you've heard about these programs that either of you would like to address?
I think some misconceptions about the field is that you're kind of stuck in the same specialty or field for the rest of your life, but I find that's largely not true. A lot of the skills you learn are largely transferable. I had several of my colleagues that, you know, went to different positions, whether it be interventional radiology or other things, and they already have a lot of the skill set that they'll need for that field. And, you know, the medical knowledge and surgical knowledge that they have from their training is highly useful in other fields. I also think that from the PA perspective, sometimes you can get some pushback if the program's not accredited, but, you know, the whole accreditation process is another topic within itself for ARC-PA.
I couldn't agree more there with you, Dahl. And I think, you know, the big thing that I hear about is, you know, you only have a specific set of skills that are not really transferable. And I'd say that can be further from the truth. You get procedural skills, you learn, you know, general medicine very well, and you learn how to think and act in situations that are stressful. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest learning experiences that I could get from fellowship, is that it forces you to be in uncomfortable situations. And whether you work in the ICU, the emergency department, you work in surgery, you're going to develop those situations where there is high level of stress. And I think, like, one of the best parts about the fellowship is you're sort of pushed in those situations and, you know, you sort of learn how to act.
And one of the other areas that you don't get a lot of training in your educational program, so be it a nurse practitioner or PA programs, is what we say are the soft sciences. So ethical dilemmas that might come up. Do you feel like both of your postgraduate training programs gave you some background into how to solve ethical dilemmas?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. Getting to see and be a part of those conversations was particularly useful, I think, in my residency program. I was able to kind of, you know, initially kind of watch more experienced providers have these conversations. And again, watching a variety of different providers have these conversations in PPA, MD, DO, whoever it may be, and kind of take bits and pieces from their talks and, you know, conversations with family and kind of mold it into my own thing when I'm having these conversations. As you get more independence and autonomy over time, you can approach this kind of with a new level of confidence and understanding, and maybe even a different viewpoint now that you have all these different rotations and all these different specialties. And I think that's extremely useful.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, my fellowship offered a lot of unique training in family meetings and difficult conversations. We had didactics and sort of mock training simulations that sort of displayed family meetings and difficult conversations, difficult patients, difficult team members that you sort of practice and conduct with, you know, feedback at the end. And I think there's just something to be said for the volume of patient care that you're involved in, given the fact that your schedule is so hectic with, like Dalton said, 5-6 days a week. You're just involved in so many different patient care scenarios, and you get to see so many different providers, you know, conduct family meetings in different ways. And that, you know, I look at those situations, I sort of pick out things that I think would be good for my approach and things that I don't think would be good for my approach. So I think just the general volume of ethical dilemmas and family meetings and difficult conversations is probably, you know, one of the things that was the most important for me.
You both talk about how your training included interprofessional training and collaboration. Can you share an experience where this interprofessional collaboration significantly impacted patient outcomes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can't think of an exact instance, but I can kind of share something unique to, you know, my fellowship. We got to spend a lot of days with different subspecialties, different people of the care team. We got to spend time with nursing, respiratory, nutrition, other physicians inside the ICU care team. And I think my understanding of what their role is and what their job is gives me a unique opportunity to utilize myself and them within the critical care team to better take care of patients.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Again, I can't think of a specific example off the top of my head. Just because we work with everyone daily, I think that's one of the advantages to residency as well, is, you know, you're working with, you know, physicians, residents, fellows, PTOT, respiratory, you know, nursing, PA, nurse practitioner, all these different roles. And I think you can learn and see a lot of different things that each of these specialties and roles do that you didn't necessarily think of. And I think bringing it all together in a multidisciplinary approach is really unique and a good experience for learners.
So putting all of this together, do you feel like you're at a different skill level right now because you went through a postgraduate training program?
Yeah, I certainly do. I think that, you know, my practice is fairly advanced given the fact that I'm a second year PA, given the fact I graduated this past year. You know, like I said, I think I've had great exposure to lots of different types of critical care. I have the procedural exposure, the multidisciplinary exposure. And I think those skills are kind of only really achieved in an intensive, you know, postgraduate training program.
I couldn't agree more. I think, like we said earlier, it kind of gives you a jump start on everything and kind of accelerates your learning and your procedural skills.
And would you say the same thing about your career trajectory as a result? Because it seems like people that go through these programs are more on a career path than just working a job.
I would definitely agree there. I think my career trajectory is, you know, pointed in definitely the right direction, given the fact that I think part of it too is just people who generally do these types of training programs have significant interest in critical care. So that sort of drives them in that direction. And then having the experience and the knowledge that the fellowship offers kind of allows you to be set up for success as far as, you know, your career rather than just working in, you know, your single job.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's certainly positively impacted my career trajectory. I think it helps you develop, you know, skills outside of, you know, patient care as well. I think you learn some leadership attributes and different things that you can kind of carry with you moving forward as well.
So I don't think anybody would be surprised by how I anticipate you answering this, but if you had somebody that was a PA student right now asking, should I consider going through a postgraduate training program, what would your response be?
I think, you know, I could speak for Dalton and myself that we would definitely push that person in the direction of postgraduate training. I think it offers unique opportunities. And like I said, it's just the best thing for your career moving forward as a brand new PA.
I couldn't agree more. I think the pros certainly outweigh the cons, and I would absolutely recommend it.
So I don't think anybody will be surprised by that. So let's put a little twist on it then. If you had to say, or if you had the opportunity to say anything that you probably haven't had the chance to yet, to people in your program that helped train you, what would you say to them? Like, think about your mentors or the people that really helped you get through the program and put something special into your training.
I would say a resounding thank you. I know it's a lot to take on, you know, a learner. There's a lot involved trying to make sure that you allow them enough autonomy to grow, but also, you know, be mindful enough of what they're doing. That way you don't compromise patient care. So I think that would be the biggest thing is just thank you. It's a lot to ask, and you know, the lessons and knowledge and things you'll carry with you for the rest of your career. So I think it's super important.
Yeah, certainly couldn't have been said better. I think, you know, it could be exhausting taking a learner with you, specifically someone who's interested with lots of questions. And I'm sure I was like that, and I'm sure that can be exhausting for that person. I guess what I would say and wish that they could sort of see is the tools that I have that they sort of afforded me that I use, you know, in my day-to-day practice, whether I'm doing lines or conducting family meetings or rounding with attendings. I think there's a lot of things that I do that I sort of stole from those mentors and keep in my tool bag and sort of use every day. So I think that's probably the biggest compliment to them and just an overall just big thank you to all of them.
I bet these mentors would be very proud to see where you both are now. So if there's anything that either of you want to add now, otherwise I think we'll wrap it up.
Gotcha. I'm all set. Thank you so much for having me.
I agree. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. So with that, this will conclude another episode of the Society of Critical Care Medicine podcast. If you're listening on your favorite podcast app and you liked what you heard, consider rating and leaving a review. So for the Society of Critical Care Medicine podcast, I'm Diane McLaughlin. Thank you.
Diane C. McLaughlin, DNP, AGA CNP BC, CCRN, FCCM, is a neurocritical care nurse practitioner at University of Florida Health, Jacksonville. She is active within SCCM, serving on both the APP Resource and Ultrasound Committees, and is a social media ambassador for SCCM. Join or renew your membership with SCCM, the only multi-professional society dedicated exclusively to the advancement of critical care. Contact a customer service representative at 847-827-6888 or visit sccm.org/membership for more information. The SCCM podcast is the copyrighted material of the Society of Critical Care Medicine, and all rights are reserved. Find more episodes at sccm.org/podcast. This podcast is for educational purposes only. The material presented is intended to represent an approach, view, statement, or opinion of the presenter that may be helpful to others. The views and opinions expressed herein are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the opinions or views of SCCM. SCCM does not recommend or endorse any specific test, physician, product, procedure, opinion, or other information that may be mentioned.